Okay, so
I want to get a little bit into a different sugya, a little bit out of order, but this is something which I think is important. We should not leave Bovakama without seeing this topic for a lot of reasons. And we have spoken about some of the yesodos that emerge from Bovakama and the themes that we want to keep in mind. We've talked about the role of Zahiris from Nezikin. We talked about in the context of Purim, we talked about in the context of everything else. It's been a major part of what we're trying to extract from the Masechta. So I think it's very crucial that we get some of the yesodos that come out of the sugya of Zenen of Zelo Chaser. And a part of it will be the relationship or lack of relationship we have to see to another concept, a phrase which does not actually show up in our Gemara, but may or may not be identical to the sugya. And that is the phrase which the Rishonim introduce, and Chazal elsewhere bring in, Kofin al midas tov. The idea that we are commanded, that we are ordered by Beis Din and otherwise, not to act like those from stone. And that's a crucial concept to try to understand, because it goes to the essence of what we're about. In essence, we are the nation of anti-stone. That Avraham Avinu, who founded our religion, he is the complete opposite of stone. And we will see, and as a matter of halacha, that the definition of what it means not to be like stone has to do with your relationship towards chesed. And Avram, therefore, as the one who was the main figure of chesed in our history, is the opposite of stone. And it's part of why it's so amazing that he davened on behalf of stone, whose very existence and whose survival would contradict his mission on this earth. But be that as it is, clearly we are meant to be as different from stone as possible, and to recognize that the Torah tells us that stone was very, very bad. We're such sinners that they literally deserved and received destruction. And it's not clear from the Pesukim what that evil was. And our sugya, assuming that it's the related sugya, that's something we'll have to talk about, is going to help us understand what that key issue was. And therefore, the relationship of that and other details that come up in the sugya are very, very much core to one of the things, to some of the things we want to take away from Bovakama. So it was important that we get this discussion in. So what is Midas Tov? How is Midas Tov defined in Halacha? Do we find it defined anywhere? Yes, Shabbatiah? Okay, so the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that mentions it. And what does it say? Somebody who slaps someone else? Somebody who kills people? What's the Midas Tov?
Somebody who's normal.
Someone who could be possibly normal. Right. So that's what's surprising. It's actually Machlokus in the Mishnah. Mishnah in Pirkei Avos talks about different attitudes one can have towards their own property, other people's property. And one of the versions that appears in the Mishnah is Haomer Shali Shali Bishalcha Shalcha. Right? Somebody who says what's mine is mine and what's yours is yours. So on the surface, doesn't sound so terrible. He's not a tzaddik who's looking to give what he has to everyone else. Okay, fine. But he's not a Rasha, apparently. He's not looking to take other people's stuff. He's not somebody who's looking to conquer the rest of the world. You know, I was discussing with my ethics class yesterday an article that I just saw that was talking about whether there are moral values that show up in every society. And they mentioned in the article that there are some surprises, even though we know that there are variances in terms of what is considered to be a moral standard in one society or the other. But this article mentioned that the dominant ethnic culture in Micronesia, apparently openly stealing people's stuff, is considered to be admirable because it's an assertion of authority. So here is an example of just how things can really be so upside down in terms of what you would think is a universal value. So you know, one might think, okay, so at least you don't do that. That's basic morality. You're not grabbing people's stuff. It's disappointing because Micronesia was the one that always votes with Israel in the UN. So kind of want to support Micronesia, but we can't support openly taking people's stuff, or even worse, secretly taking people's stuff. So I guess that from that side, it's better. But in any event, so you might think, okay, so look, this guy, he's not taking other people's stuff. He's just saying, shali, shali, v'sholcha, sholcha. So what's mine is mine, and what's yours is yours. So is that so terrible? So according to one opinion, no. That is midabeninus. It's not too hot, it's not too cold. That's a Goldilocks. But according to the other opinion of the Mishnah, what is that? Hareza midastom. That's considered to be midastom. So that's something we got to figure out. What is so terrible about that? Maury?
I'm just thinking maybe it's interesting to, I guess, sort of look at the point that we understand from the sages of Lithim Shar Sedin that you don't need to always go above and beyond. So for saying that maybe just a higher standard for us is that, again, also what Rebbe is talking about, understanding Sodom to be such an evil place, that this, it might just be like a ha'ara on the standard that we hold ourselves to.
Okay, so that's itself interesting, except that it can't only be about us, because here we're talking about the other extreme. It's not saying this is Midas Avraham Avinu. It's saying that this is Midas Dom. So presumably if you're saying that we hold ourselves to an elevated standard, so is there nothing in the middle? It's not that there's only two choices. So that's something we have to figure out. These are the bad guys, not just the ones who aren't the highest level. So that's itself surprising. We'll have to figure out exactly what that represents to us. It's interesting that clearly we're talking about something very low level here. It's got to be more than just a lack of staka. And you bring up the phrase, Lifnim b'shuras adin. So maybe we'll get to that today, if not next time, that some of the Rishonim and Baba Basra specifically talk about how this relates to the phrase Lifnim b'shuras adin. And is this simply a lack of Lifnim b'shuras adin, or is there more of a space in between? So what the role is of that phrase and Midas Dom, we'll have to consider that as well. Follow up?
Unrelated, but I guess more of a Mishnah's question or just a Lima question. Could you say that it's just there abysmal?
It's hard to believe, you know, especially because it's coming specifically to argue on another opinion. So one opinion says that it's a stam, okay, that's a normal person, average, not impressive, not unimpressive. And then there's this other opinion coming saying, no, that's bad, that's dumb.
What about the context of Pirkei Avos? It's teaching us Mahalfit Ayin.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying that maybe there's like room to say that it's almost like in this area you should strive to the extremes, and it might fall in the same way that one should do that for another and for other things.
So I think again that could work better if it wasn't specifically comparing it to the extreme of evil. And we'll also have to see. So keep that question in mind, how that relates to our Gemara here. Again, we'll see in a minute that it's not in our Gemara explicitly, that it's possibly implicit in our Gemara, and we'll see just how exactly it's meant to play out to Lach L'maisa. I think I remember Rabbi Yitzchak Blau, an article in Tradition many years ago, wrote a very informative article about, I think the title is Rabbinic Responses to Communism. And it talks about different ways to understand communism, and I think he quotes somebody there explaining al pidar chadrush that you see the extremes of capitalism and communism in the beginning of Sefer Bereishis. If you look first in the beginning of Parshas Noach, so you have an extremely materialistic society. We know that Chazal have identified among the Averis of the Dor HaMabul, you know, what might be portrayed by a communist as a capitalist nightmare, exploitation of workers, Hamas, things like that, ways to squeeze all the material exploitation that you can get out of someone else without necessarily going over the line. So that was the Dor HaMabul. Dor HaMabul was an extreme capitalist nightmare, so to speak. And then the end of Parshas Noach, you have the generation of the tower. So there, that sounds like a communist vision, everyone getting together to join in one project and challenging God and de-emphasizing individual existence. So that's the pendulum swinging in the other direction. And then the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, so you have Sdom. Sdom is back to an extreme capitalist vision. Right? Kind of a absolute, unmodified capitalism of saying, I don't have any involvement in Staka, what's mine is mine, what's yours is yours, and that's it. I'm not stealing from you, but what I earned is mine, what I have is mine, and what you have is yours. So, it's an interesting idea. We'll have to see exactly how that plays in. Now, we're not advocating socialism here. We haven't been swept up in that wave yet. But the question of just the systems at their extreme without any kind of other considerations is a part of what's being depicted here. So, so far as what we have portrayed here, you know, we don't know necessarily, we can't account for all the agadic sources, and we know there are other avaris that are certainly also associated with stone. But it is very instructive that as far as what's being highlighted, this could really have tremendous ramifications for us in a halachic sense, that here is where the Gemara is telling us that Midas Stone can be identified halachically. And again, when I say here, I mean the Rishonim here rather than the Gemara here, but this sugya may be telling us what can be identified as Stone halachically. And considering the fact that Stone is really portrayed as irredeemably evil, as evil in a way that had to be wiped out, it's a very powerful statement as far as what we take away from it practically. So let's try to consider what this could possibly mean. So our Gemara, we won't go through the whole Gemara together, but as you noted, it's a long Gemara, but it gave you to look at the discussion that appears throughout Dav Chaf and Dav Chaf Aleph and Bava Kamma in the second parak about Hador B'chatzu Chaveiro Shalom Idaito. If somebody would decide that, okay, his neighbor is away, and he left his house available, and I'll decide that I'm going to sleep there for a while. So this is a Zebedik discussion. It's portrayed that way. The Gemara tells us in the bottom of Chaf Mar Aleph, Amalei Rav Chis, L'Rami Barachama, L'Havis Gaban, Ba'orisa, B'tchuma, D'Baila, Milim Al Yisov. We had a Zebedik discussion. We had a good question and a good shir to talk about. So I'm reminded, my mother asked, so what did I miss? Amalei Hadar B'chatzer Chaveru Shlomidaito Tzarech L'Halos Hizchar O Ein Tzarech. So when one does this, so does he have to pay rent? Can he be charged rent for living in somebody else's house? Now, it's important to appreciate why is this question coming up in this Gemara? Because it's related to the Mishnah. The Mishnah here, if you noticed, the Mishnah is talking about an animal that is eating Birshus HaRabim. So, strictly speaking, there should be a Ptur Nezek for eating Birshus HaRabim, as we spoke about. But the Gemara, the Mishnah talks about a context of where it has to be Mishalem for its Hana. V'mnenes Mishalemes Mashanenes. So without going into all the details of that, why is that important? What's being highlighted by that that's relevant to this question now? So the important distinction is that normally in Bava Kamma, we're talking about Mezikin. So if I damage your stuff, what's the important question to try to figure out where, how much liability is assessed? How much damage I caused. Right, so we talked about for a while, does it make a difference about replacement cost, sentimental value, if the cost was offset by other things, if you made the item go up. We talked about different ways to assess how much damage. But normally that's what we're interested in. We're interested in how much damage did you do, however that's going to be assessed. But here we're introducing a new factor, that it's not necessarily about the damage, it's about the hana. So how might those be assessed differently? So let's say if your animal eats from this item, Birshus Arabim, so we're not necessarily going to try to evaluate the worth of what was eaten in a Nezikin sense, but instead we'll evaluate the hana. So what does that mean? It means, okay, so the owner of this animal normally would have to pay for feeding the animal. And now he doesn't, because the animal got something to eat. So what was that worth to him? How do we assess how he benefited? So once we're bringing this up, that we're looking at the concept of nene, which itself is a huge, huge topic in halacha. We'll see how much we can bring into this discussion. But once we're talking about the notion of nene, so that itself should tell us that there's two different halves of the equation. Right? So there is the damage side, and there is the benefit side. So now we're curious, okay, what if somebody benefits without damaging? Which is what we call zenene v'zelo chaser. So if you find a situation where somebody benefits and the other guy doesn't lose, how do we look at that lahalach? Mori? Okay. So that's why this discussion is now on our radar screen. So that question, do you have to pay or not? So the Gemara is, hey, chidomi. What's the scenario? If you're going to tell me that the situation is, it's the kind of person that does not look to rent things. He's not in the market to rent stuff. And the area that he took, crucially, was not space that normally is rented out. He didn't sneak into the Waldorf Astoria without checking in, but he went to a space that isn't normally used for business purposes. So, is that what we're talking about? So, if we're talking about Chazal Kamel Argav of the Megar, so that's really Zelo Nene. This guy didn't really benefit either, because he got something that was not worth anything to him. Vizelo Chaser. And the owner didn't lose out, because it wasn't a valued space. It wasn't a space that's used for a business. Ela b'chotzer the kaima la'agra, v'gavra the av la'megar. So if you're going to tell me we're talking about a situation where it is a hotel, it is there, or it's a Airbnb or whatever it is used for rental, and the person is in the market for a place to rent. So that is zednene v'zechaser. So then, that doesn't fit this model. The owner is losing out, and the squatter is benefiting. Lo tzricha b'chatzir d'loy kaim d'agra. We're talking about a place that is not a business commodity. V'gavra d'ovah d'megar. But somebody who is interested in finding a place to stay. So then, what's the story? So Maya, what's going on? So matzi amrlei may chaser tzricha. Can the squatter say, what do you want from me? I wasn't machasi or anything. I didn't cost you anything. Oh, Dilma, or maybe Matsu Amale, can the owner say, ha is hanes. I gave you what to benefit from. And Rashi explains, di lav chatzit didi havas ogre acharini. Were it not for me, then you'd have to rent somewhere else. Similar to what's the context of the Mishnah. If the animal hadn't eaten something, so then the owner would have had to feed him some other way that would have cost him something. So we're not going to go through the whole back and forth in the Gemara inside. You got a chance to see on your own. We'll just go a few lines further. Amalei Masnisen, so the response was, it's a Mishnah. So, hi Masnisen. So, which Mishnah is it? So, Amalei Lechi Tisha Mishli. I'll tell you when you do something for me. You do one thing for me, so I will tell you. Shakul Sudre, Karachle, so he wrapped him up a little bit. And then he responded to him, Amarlei Mnenes, Mishlamas Mashanenes, our Mishnah, that if the animal benefits, then you pay for what you benefit. So is that comparable? Is it not comparable? Okay, so the Gemara is going to get into that. I always thought it was interesting to focus on, it relates a little bit to what we spoke about yesterday, what's the role of Agadata and Halacha when they're mixed in. So why is that line there? I'll answer you when you do something for me. So there is some commentary as to what exactly he's trying to say, or your machshiv, what I have to teach you. It could be that it's a part of the theme of the sugya. The question is, you know, what do you get for free and what do you pay for? What do you value enough that you're going to have to give for something? So it's interesting to ponder just why that line is here. But in any event, so the Gemara tries to figure out, okay, so is this comparable? Is the Mishnah case relevant? There's an act of purported hezek. This is something else. So this is going to be the back and forth of our Gemara. Do we say that Hadar b'chatz chaveru shalom midaito, do you have to pay or not? So here, our Gemara does not have the phrase kofen al midasto. But you see, Tosfos over here brings it in. Tosfos at the top of kofen midbeis refers you to the sugya of Bava Basra, where there in the Gemara at least you have the phrase kofen. You don't have zenan of zolachas. So what's the story in Bava Basra? So there, the Gemara talks about a few brothers whose father owns a property. And one of the brothers, maybe he's already kind of a vulture and he's anticipating his future Yerusha, but he buys some land that's adjacent to one part of the property, to one side of the property. And then the father dies. So it's time for the brothers to split the property that the father owned. And let's assume for a second, see that there are variables here that make a difference, but let's assume for a second that the land is all equally valuable. All the parts of the land are worth the same amount per foot. And the brother who has the adjacent property, he says, okay, we're splitting this anyway. I want the half that is next to my existing property because much more valuable to me. I'll have one connected property. I'll have one big land now. And the other brothers, or let's say one brother commits to the other brother, it's all equally valuable, so it doesn't matter whether he gets the north side or the south side. So what's the story there? Can the other brother say, no, let's take a lottery. Let's do a girl. Or do we say that, come on, give it to him? So what does the Gemara sound like?
Should give it to him.
Should give it to him, right? And about that we say, kofen al midasto. So there, apparently, for the brother who doesn't own pre-existing land to interfere with the other brother's ability to combine the two properties, we say that is midasto, and we compel you not to act that way. And what does Rashi say over there on that phrase, kofel midasto? Zanenev zelochasim. So, that's our first question we want to figure out. And again, we'll try to get some of the major questions out today, and then we'll be able to fill them in more next time. But are these two phrases necessarily linked? Zed nenev zed lo chaser and kofen al midasto? We've just seen now two Gemaras. Each one has one phrase and not the other. And in each case, Rishonim bring up the other one and assume a linkage. So what do you think? Are these figures the same? Are they different? What's the same about them? What's not the same? Jed?
I mean, it doesn't sound like, if you're defining kofen al midat sodom, or midat sodom, like we saw in the Mishnah, so it doesn't necessarily fit completely when you say, like, oh, maybe zenenev zelochaser, you know, if someone's going to benefit, it's not going to make you lose anything, let him benefit. I don't know how that necessarily connects to shali, shali, shalcha, shalcha.
Okay, well, so then you're asking the Chlal, how does the third source connect? How does the Mishnah connect? So my first question, which is, your question is important too, but the question
not,
is
that's not the same.
Not yet. So I mean, it's going to play a role here. But I want to know Bava Kama and Bava Basra. Are they telling us the same din in different cases, or what's the same about the cases? What's different about the cases?
It seems like it's a little bit different because it's, I mean, it doesn't seem like Zanen and this Elochas are the same as Kofan and Sodom. I think kind of like what Jeff was saying. If we're defining it as Omer Shali Shali Shacha Shacha, Zanen and this Elochas seems more like Shacha Shali Vishali Shali. It sounds way more like I mean this Rasha, because I'm being Nana off of your thing, off of Shacha, but I mean Zelochas, that's great. I'm not detracting from you, but I'm still being.
And what scenario are you talking about? Which case sounds like that?
The guys.
Which case is it?
Okay.
See, but our case above a comma. You saying that case sounds worse?
It sounds worse than Kofan Abi the Sodom, Alpi the Agara and Avos. I would say.
Okay, so let's just identify our three cases here. You have Avos, which is abstract, doesn't really tell us exactly what it's talking about, unless you want to say it does. Okay, it's a case where I say mine is mine, yours is yours, and you can't share. So you have Avos, you have Bava Basra, you have Bava Kama. So
Kama is worse, I would say.
Okay, worse than what? You think Bava Kama is the worst of all the cases?
Because I'm leeching.
You're leeching. So the interesting thing is you're focusing on the squatter. But he's not the target of any criticism here yet. He's not the one who's being accused of stone-like behavior. It's the.
Do we look at the
Tosas or not? Even without that, the point is that the one who's possibly involved in stone like behavior is the owner of the house.
That makes it more similar.
Makes what similar to what?
Makes Bava Kama Bava Basra more similar.
Okay, explain.
Well, I've been thinking about it as looking at the squatter as terms of maybe having established. Then I don't think both cases would be similar because one is a case of. You're using property that doesn't belong to you versus it's your property, and would you want to let somebody else use it? If you look at the owner in terms of whether it's your property, you want to let somebody else use it. In the case of Bava Basra, it's technically both of their properties, and it's just a matter of, well, I want to use this one side, or I want to use that side. Therefore, it's looking at it in terms of whether or not you're allowing to use someone else to use your property.
That makes them similar or dissimilar?
That makes them more similar.
Makes the two similar to each other,
yeah.
Because they both have what's the common element?
Because it's both, if we're both looking at through the lens of the people who own the property, that would make them similar.
So in both cases, somebody is trying to deny.
Is it fine to let somebody else use your property?
But in Bava Basra, it's shared. It's a question how it's going to be assigned.
But it's still technically both there. I mean, like, that's permission.
Okay, interesting. I think there's a different angle here, but this is an interesting point to point out. Jodai?
I think in Bava Kama, the owner of the house has what to gain if he's able to...
charge rent?
Yeah, if he's able to charge, then he has what to gain. He's going to gain money. As opposed to, in the other case, there's literally zero gain for him getting this property. It would just be an inconvenience to the other person, but zero gain for him.
Okay, I think that's a very important distinction. I'll flesh that out in a second. Or did you have something you want to say?
I was just also going to say, I guess I was going to ask, I don't really understand how the homeowner is being nana.
How, which homeowner, here?
Yeah.
He's not. He's the lochaser part.
Right, but for...
The nana is the squatter, and the lochaser is the owner. But it's the owner who's potentially being accused of stone-like behavior. So just to explain, what's the connection between the two sugyas? Why are the Rishonim drawing at this line that connects the two? And why might you distinguish? So the ostensible connection between the two, the reason the sugyas have any link, is because they do both invoke some phrase, some meaning to a phrase, Zenen Nevezel Ochasik. That in the case of Bava Kama, in our case, so ze nene, meaning the squatter, he has hana, he benefits. But ze, the owner, is not chas or anything. So despite that he's not chas or anything, he still wants to interfere, he still wants to charge rent. So that is where we question his justification. In the case in Baba Basra, where Rashi puts in the phrase Zenden of Zelo Chaser, again, there is a scenario of Zenden of Zelo Chaser, that if this would work out, if the already property-owning brother would get the chiluk that he wants, so then Zeh would be Nene, he'd be Mahana himself by having a bigger property, and a not disconnected, non-contiguous property. Vizeh, the other brother, Lo Chaser, either way, it doesn't matter to him. So to stop this, that's where we have the allegation of stone-like behavior. So in that way, they're connected. That's the ostensible link between them. They have that parallel structure. Both of them have some interpretation of a statement Zenen of Zelo Chaser that applies to them. However, the distinction may also be significant. Because, and this is, I think, what Jed was saying, that in both cases, we have somebody we're accusing of stone-like behavior. But they don't seem to be equally evil. They don't seem to be equally bad. And which one is worse between the two?
Baba Basra.
Baba Basra, right? Because in the case of Baba Basra, who knows what kind of childhood these two brothers had, what kind of sibling rivalry there was, but it seems like the second brother is just trying to mess over the first brother. Because the two areas of land are equally valuable. It shouldn't matter to this brother whether he gets the north side or the south side. So the only reason he wants to invoke his rights here is to interfere with his brother's ability to have a nice big piece of land. So that's stam achzorius, it sounds like. That is stam cruelty. On the surface. We'll see if that's the only way to look at it. In the case in Bava Kamma, what is it that the property owner wants to do? He wants to just mess over the other guy? No. He wants money. He wants to be paid. Now, we can argue about whether he deserves to get paid. That seems to be the question at hand. Is it enough to provide benefit for someone when that benefit does not cost you anything? That's our issue. But his desire here is not such a crazy desire. He wants to make money. Everybody wants to make money. Doesn't mean he's legitimately entitled to the money, but he doesn't have to be cruel in order to want the money. I think I mentioned to you earlier in the year when we were talking about the Haftorah that isn't read on Hanukkah, but the Haftorah about Mishpat Shlomo. We talked about the story of Shlomo HaMelech and the case of the baby. I did that earlier this year. I think I mentioned to you at the time that I once had discovered in my childhood a book about a wise Japanese judge, and it had a story exactly like that. So I remember one other story from that book, that there was a poor man who was homeless, and he lived outside a bakery. And he told somebody he was talking to that even though he doesn't have any money for anything, and he has a sad life, but the one enjoyment that he gets is that when they bake fresh cake and fresh bread in his bakery and the aroma comes through the window, so he enjoys that smell, so at least he has that good thing in his life. So the baker overheard this and he said he shouldn't get my aroma for free. If he's going to be enjoying the smell of my cake and my bread, I want to charge him. So he ended up in front of this Japanese judge. And the question was, does indeed this homeless man with no money, does he have to pay for enjoying the aroma of this baker? So in the story, as I recall, everyone is shocked because the judge, with seeming incredible insensitivity, says to this poor man, he says, "Tell me, do you have any money in the world?" And he says, "Yes, I have 2 coins. That's everything I have." And the judge says, "Okay, reach into your pocket and take out the 2 coins. And everyone is shocked that he's really going to make this poor guy give everything he has, just the aroma of the bread. Can't be. What's going to be in the end of the story? So, a tremendous dramatic moment. He takes out the 2 coins. And then the judge says, "Okay, now put them back in your pocket." And then he explained that since he was being asked to pay for the aroma of the bread without taking the bread itself, so the proper payment was that the baker got to hear the sound of the 2 coins clinking together, but not get the coins themselves. So that was the story I read many, many years ago, and it was the only other story in that book that I remember. So you see, there's the issue, right? So that's essentially a Zen and a Vizela Chaser kind of case. Without getting into the halakhic questions of the Reach is called Hana and it's not the Minas for Pesach and then Vasa V'chalav and the like, but essentially that's what the story's about, right? It's about a Zen and a Chaser situation that the poor person was being Nene, was enjoying the smell, but he doesn't take anything away from the baker. So does the baker have an entitlement to get paid under those circumstances if he's not giving up anything? So of course, because of the circumstances of that story, so it comes out that he's incredibly cruel, that baker, not appreciating how poor the person was. But let's say if it hadn't been such a dramatic contrast in circumstances, if somebody decides he wants to charge for something that's not actually depleting his inventory at all, so the question might be, all right, is he entitled to get paid for that? It's not necessarily evil of him to want to. In that story, it's evil because of who he was trying to take from. But in the average circumstance, not inherently evil. It's, okay, a desire for money, which everyone has, but it's just not justified. So that would seem to be a significant distinction between the two. All right, that in the case of Bava Basra, there's cruelty involved. And in the case of Bava Kamba, it's just a desire for money, which is a normal human desire. So it seems like the phrase "Enena Vizela Chaser" applies to both cases, but it means different things. Sounds like in Bava Kamba, it means that I want to get paid for your hana, even though it wasn't machasim anything. And Bava Basra, it means I don't want you to have hana, even though your hana would not be machasim. So one of the things we're going to have to figure out is, are these two sugyas the same? Does Zen and Ezlo Chaser equal Kofan Amidas Dom? Are they two different terms for the same thing? Or is it possible to have one without the other? Could it be that Bava Kamba is really Zen and Ezlo Chaser, but not Midas Dom? And that maybe only Bava Basra is Midas Dom? Mark?
The Rashi Tosfos and Bava Kamba that are going to understand the Baal to actually be losing out, that's not on the other cases only, or they're even weighing in on...
Well, not necessarily. So Rashi, Tosfos here is more complicated, we don't have time to get to it today, but Rashi puts the phrase into Bava Basra. Doesn't necessarily tell us what Rashi thinks about the sugya. I mean, it could be that the phrase is used in different ways in different contexts. They don't necessarily know because of that Rashi that Bava Kamba is equal to Bava Basra. But that's what's linking the two. The Rishon is invoking in both places the other sugya, and the ostensible same use of the phrase, or use the same phrase used in both places, that's what puts the question on our table. So there are a couple of nafkaminas of the question of are these sugyas really the same. We'll have to get into those more next time. And here's a thought experiment, which is going to be very important. Can you make the sugyas the same? Can you tweak any details that will smooth over the differences between the two? Can you ask the question from either direction? Can you tweak Bava Basra to make it more similar to Bava Kamba? Let's start with that way.
Right now, Baba Basra is just a story about one brother being a jerk to another. Can you tweak it where it's more similar to Baba Kama? Where it's about somebody trying to profit without necessarily being justified?
Well, what if the brother who's splitting the land, what if it's not that he says to the first brother, no way, I'll make sure that you don't have the right adjacent land, you don't have the contiguous property? He's not saying that. He's saying, sure, I'll give you the land you want. Pay me. If you want me to give up my chance in a lottery, so clearly this land is valuable to you, so pay me for it. Would it didn't be the same? Would you say, Kof and I'll be that stone there?
So you'll see that that's an issue that Rishonim talk about. And that becomes very relevant to the halachic conclusions of that sukkah.
So that would be one way to bring Baba Basra in sync with Baba Kama. What about the other way around? Can you make Baba Kama be more similar to Baba Basra? Let me ask you this question. What if, all right, we read, you know, the conclusion here in Baba Kama is that the owner of the house cannot charge rent to the squatter. What if it's before the situation? So let's say the owner knows this guy is going to try to squat in his house, and the owner knows that he can't get paid for it. So he says, I don't want you staying in my house. I can't benefit from it one way or another. It's not going to cost me anything. So I don't want you doing it. Or let's say, to make it sound even more stone-like, let's put it back into the Japanese baker case. Right? Let's say it's the next day, so the psak has already come down from the Japanese judge that the baker is never going to be able to charge this poor person for the smell of his bread. So the baker says, okay, I don't want you hanging around near my bakery. I don't want you getting the aroma of this bread since I can't charge you for it. I don't want you having it at all. Does he have the right to do that? So that's also going to be a discussion of the Rishon. So what have we seen in the past few minutes? That Baba Kama and Baba Basra have something in common. They also have something different. We don't know how important that difference is. And theoretically, it's possible to tweak either case to make it more similar to the other. And what will that do to the bottom line? And before letting you go, I'll tell you one more application of whether they're similar or not. This was a discussion I had once with one of my great teachers in Rebbeim in life, Rabbi Levine, the Chassadic Lebracha, who taught economics and Jewish law here, and whose new book on the Drushas of Yom Tovim is just about to arrive here. So that's an exciting announcement. You're hearing it first. So, remember, Rabbi Levine maintained the following. That let's say somebody is driving somewhere, and he's going to that location no matter what. And while he's on his way, he encounters a friend of his who also needs to get there, and he gives this friend a ride. Doesn't go out of his way in any way, doesn't change his route to any degree, just happens to also provide a ride for this person to the exact same place he was going. So is he allowed to say to this guy, all right, now I want you to pay me for the ride? So what do you think? Based on just what we've seen so far today, without any other svaris, is he allowed to say, pay me for the ride?
It's the Baba Kama case.
It sounds like the Baba Kama case, right? So if it's like the Baba Kama case, can you charge for the ride? Sounds like no, right? There could be other details that could affect this thing, but just dealing with what we've seen so far.
Sounds like you can't charge for the ride. Let's stipulate to that for a second. Let's assume that's true, you can't charge for the ride. But let's say the partner says, or that the passenger says, thank you so much for the ride, I really appreciate it, let me pay you. And the driver's not demanding it, but the passenger is offering. Rabbi Levine felt that he's not even allowed to accept it. Not only can't he charge it, but he can't accept it. Why not? Why can't he accept something somebody is offering him?
Rivis?
Well, not Rivis, but Kofin al Midas Dom. Said that the phrase Kofin al Midas Dom is not simply you're not Zolche. It's not simply the other guy's not Chai. That phrase is saying it's antithetical to Jewish values. It's completely abhorrent to us. So we force you not to do this.
So what about tipping, though?
Also, tipping is part of payment for a service. And we'll get, I won't say more about that, but tipping is a different kind of category. But here he's saying the person is not a taxi driver. He doesn't get paid for this driving at all. And he wants to charge somebody who happened to benefit from his driving. So he's not allowed to charge, okay. But not only can't he charge, but if the passenger offers, he should not accept. This is completely outside of our value system.
Well, why is he not allowed to charge?
Because well, let's assume this might be arguable.
Yeah, imagine you're not allowed to charge, like in the middle of your driving. You're like, oh, okay, I know I didn't say anything before about an order, but when I get to my when we get to the destination, you owe me like $50, and he's like, if you don't pay me, I'm gonna kick you out right here, like.
Yeah,
road,
so
that's a bad.
So perhaf it's a fair question you're asking. You know,
but
can,
like if
can you change
beforehand? Like you can say that, yeah, I'll drive you, but for price.
I think it's a fair question, and we could talk about that in more detail next time. But for now, just for the sake of discussion, let's stipulate that this is comparable to the squatter in somebody's house. So okay, I didn't lose anything. I went to the exact same trip I was going on anyway. Spent the same gas, the same tolls. Everything was the exact same expense as it would have been. Same time driving, so nothing was taken out of me. So therefore, all that happened was you benefited from being in the car, so I shouldn't be allowed to charge you for that. It's just your hana without the chisarum comparable to a dar b'chatz chaver. So if we accept that, okay, fine. But does that mean that the passenger can't offer? That there's something wrong about even taking it when it's voluntarily offered? So Rabbi Levine felt that there was because of the phrase kofen on midas dom. That this is not simply a way of saying putter, it's a way of saying the other guy is a stomite. That's much more than saying Reuven is putter when you're saying that Shimon is a stomite for even wanting it. So that is clearly assuming that the cases are equated that way. That the Bava Kama case, which we're saying is the comparable case here, the Bava Kama case is also a Kofin Almina Stone case. But how do we know that it is? Or maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Maybe that's something that the Rishonim will argue on. Or that the Rishonim could be arguing on. So that's also something we want to pick up on next time. So just some thought questions. Again, tomorrow we'll probably do more Yom HaDioma, but when we come back to this topic, we'll have to look into some of these things. Some of the thought questions we're left with are Bava Kama will last for the same, and should the implications of one affect the other, and even if they're not the same, what happens if we add some details to equalize them? Does that change the halacha? And we haven't even gotten into some other questions, such as in our Gemara where we say Pater, why do we say Pater? What's the nature of the Pater? What would affect that? Under what circumstances would there be a chiyuv? And all of that, God willing, lays ahead. All right, I will see you tomorrow. Should have a